This is Law Bites, a podcast with Michael Geist.
And Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has announced the upcoming budget will include a $2.4 billion investment in artificial intelligence. Prime Minister Trudeau made the announcement in Montreal as part of a pre-budget tour. He said that investment will help harness the full potential of AI by accelerating job growth in Canada's AI sector while boosting research and business productivity through its adoption. The funding will be divided into different measures, with the largest amount going toward Canadian AI researchers, startups, and industry expansion.
Bill C-27, Canada's proposed privacy reform and AI regulation bill, continues to slowly, well, very slowly, work its way through the committee process at the House of Commons, with clause-by-clause review of the AI portion of the bill still weeks or perhaps even months away. Recently, a group of nearly 60 leading civil society organizations, corporations, experts, and academics released an open letter calling on the government to separate the bill into two. Andrew Clement has been an important voice in that group, as he has tracked not only the committee hearings, but also dug into the consultation process that has surrounded the bill. Clement is a professor emeritus in the Faculty of Information at the University of Toronto, where he coordinates the Information Policy Research Program and co-founded the Identity, Privacy, and Security Institute. He joins me on the podcast to talk about AI regulation in Canada, concerns with the bill, and offers insights into the legislative and consultative process. Andrew, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you, Michael. It's great to be here.
Yeah, no, I'm glad to have you back. As you know, I've covered Bill C-27, the privacy and AI bill, multiple times before on this podcast. And now that the bill's at clause by clause, where committee is going literally clause by clause through the bill and proposing different changes, I thought it would be useful to get an update on where things are at, specifically on the AI portion of the bill. And this comes in part due to a recent letter that I know you contributed to, which urged the government to separate the two aspects of the bill, move ahead with the privacy side and not with the AI side. Why don't we start first with the hearings? They've been going on for months. We've had well over 100 briefs filed, over 100 witnesses, including both of us. Can you describe a little bit that committee process and where things are at right now?
Yeah, well, that committee process started in September with the Minister of Industry, Mr. Champagne, making some an interesting introduction. You commented on that he said he'd broken the hearings from the beginning because he was announced a whole bunch of potential amendments that they were not going to reveal until clause by clause, is what he said at the time. They subsequently introduced them in, I think, November, late November. But that the hearing of witnesses ended in February, and I thought it was pretty interesting. And now they're working through what's known as clause by clause, they've divided their consideration into the parts of the bill. I mean, their hearings into the parts of the bill. So they're working through parts one and two, which is about data protection, privacy. It's going slowly. They've got probably a couple hundred amendments. I don't know what amendment they're on now, but they're on Monday they were at page five of 150 pages. They spent 2 days, quite interestingly, on getting moving human rights out of a preamble and into the substance of the bill, I believe. It took them 2 days to come to that. So they are proceeding at a rather slow pace. So in terms of the ADA part, I hear that it's not likely to get to there until September, like after the summer break. If they get through, I think they've only got a few more weeks of hearings left in this term. They're also dealing with other issues that come up, as you might expect. So it'd be a while before I think we get to ADA It's important that they spend their time on the privacy part, because it's really an important bill, long overdue, but it's going slowly.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, certainly, about the importance of the privacy side. That was one of the frustrations with putting both of the bills together. I mean, that's an interesting piece of information to suggest that we're looking to the fall before the AI provisions come about. I mean, that really suggests it's going to be very tough to frankly, get this bill into law. But we will come to that a little bit later. For the moment, you know, it was good to bring us back to that moment when Champagne led off and sort of said, hey, we're going to make a bunch of changes, and initially said, they're not prepared to tell the committee the specifics, at least the language of the specifics of those changes. You know, what's your take generally of these hearings? They've been going on for months. There certainly was a pretty wide range of witnesses that appeared. What's your takeaway from what the committee's heard over the many months?
Yeah, well, I found it interesting. I can't say that I've watched all of them. I mean, you know, a significant fraction, let's say. And frankly, I'm more impressed than I expected to be from the beginning. For a start, the review of this bill was given to the INDU committee, the Standing Committee on Industry and Technology. They're not used to dealing with privacy and data protection. That's usually part of the ETHI committee on access to information, privacy in the name of it, and ethics. And I interpreted that, and I'm sure I'm not alone, that industry, they wanted it to put it to a more friendly committee, or one that would be more likely to talk about, be sympathetic to the industry ministry than ETHI, and the privacy commissioner reports to ETHI committee. So why would they put a privacy data protection bill to an industry committee? Because this is new to them. So I had low expectations about what they would be doing. I see this as a fundamental problem, but the committee, I think, has done pretty well, surprisingly well. The discussion has been civil and attentive. I think it's been very well chaired. That has helped a lot. And so I would say that they're doing their best to make with a bad hand that they were dealt with, and that the bad hand is jamming these two very disparate pieces of legislation together in a single package. So,
yes, and that certainly, and that perspective, I think, has been the concern of many. I know that I raised it as well. You know, what part of what sparked this particular episode is that last month, nearly 60 leading civil society groups, companies, experts, and academics released an open letter on the AI portion of the bill on AIDA. Can you talk a bit about what it said and what the letter is calling for?
Yeah, well, this is actually the fourth letter that's come from this, I'd say, loosely affiliated coalition of civil society organizations, experts, academics. You know, there's some private sector groups in there as well. Fourth letter in a year, starting back in March of last year, calling for basically the same thing, a fundamental reset of the AIDA portion. And there's many different issues with that bill, particularly the process one, that it was introduced without notice, without any public consultation, sort of as if it came from nowhere. And frankly, it was a draft. It was called a draft in the House of Commons debate in the fall of 2022, and it shows that's had, I think, a big impact on its substance. That the fact that it hasn't actually been well informed by any kind of discussion, I would say, with public, but also with experts who have a diversity of views. So it's in some ways a legislative mess, frankly. And what this letter called for, as all of them have called for, is splitting the bill so that they can proceed independently. In a way, having AIDA attached to this data protection bill has really slowed that down. I think it's a bit like an albatross or a weight on it, because it turned an already complicated bill into, which was C11 previously, into a much harder and more problematic one. So we've always called for sending it back for redrafting. But also, we've recognized that the government may not, in fact, is unlikely to do that at this point. And so what the previous letter in March that we sent also identified priority amendments. So if you are going to proceed with this folly in a way, then, you know, at least here are three big things that you should be looking at to make up for the lack of consultation. So have a short review period or for having a parliamentary review. If it's put into law, we should examine it, you know, 3 to 5 years. The minister is not appear to be open to that. It should have a fundamental basis in human rights. And also, it needs independent oversight and enforcement. Getting the AI and Data Commissioner out of the minister's office or out of the industry ministry, that's a fundamental problem. There are quite a number of others which we enumerate in that letter. So we're trying to do both things. Say it should be sent back, but if it's going to go ahead, you know, then it needs some serious fixing.
Okay. And I think, you know, those are issues that shouldn't frankly be all that controversial. And I'm not a huge fan of these review processes, which I must admit, I don't think amount to very much, but nevertheless, there isn't a lot of harm in it. And certainly the concerns around the independent oversight is an issue that I think has come up regularly, certainly by committee and many who have examined the bill. You know, when I appeared before a committee, I also expressed concern about the two bills. And I do think that, you know, one of my fundamental concerns, and I think it was shared by a number of people, is it just made effective study of both bills just so exceptionally difficult. Yeah. You, as a witness, witness only had a few minutes to provide some opening comments, and you basically had to focus on one issue or the other. And MPs similarly have very compressed time and have to do the same. And they, of course, will typically have multiple witnesses before them. It just doesn't allow for a deep dive into almost anything. So I'm unquestionably supportive, but I want to play devil's advocate a little bit, at least with some of the kinds of concerns that have been raised, given where we're at in this process and given how long this has taken. And I guess I'd start by saying, you know, you mentioned that the quality of the discussion has exceeded your admittedly lower expectations. And I have to say that perhaps at least part of that is, I would guess, has to do with the fact that the witness list, when you go through who has appeared, is pretty impressive. It is most of the top voices on AI, privacy, a wide range of NGOs, some of the major associations. There was a day for the leading tech companies. So it does feel like the committee has done a good job of trying to get as many of those perspectives up before committee. So I guess that, I think, reasonably raises the question, you know, so what's the problem? If the study was such that they did get all those views before it, and there's presumably will be another chance to do it again before the Senate, why do we need to hit the reset button?
Well, I think you've actually alluded to a couple of the problems. One is witnesses have basically had to decide how they were going to spend their five minutes, and some, you know, very knowledgeable witnesses like your colleague Teresa Scazza. She was one of the early ones. I think she was on with you or just shortly after you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So she focused exclusively on the first parts 1 and 2. She has a lot to say about those and very important things to say, but she didn't address Ada, and she was on the AI Advisory Council. She's got a lot of things to say about Ada as well. And I think, I can't speak for her, but I suspect she thought that she would have an opportunity to address Ada when it came back. But the committee, I mean, understandably, given how many they have, basically said you get one shot. And so you have people not being able to really properly address either of them or being faced with this, you know, so Hobson's choice. And so that's a fundamental, I think, problem with the hearings and the committee. You know, I don't think they could have done anything better. The other thing is that, and now I'm no expert on parliamentary, you know, practices and procedures, but it strikes me that the parliamentary review process by these committees, even when done diligently, is not a substitute for the kind of discussions and consultations when done properly. You have got your 5 minutes. You're on with four other witnesses. Some of you are remote. You were had the good fortune, I think, to be in person. I and many others were remote, and you know, we just didn't get the kind of questions and the time to really dig into these very complex issues that we're keen to do. And if done properly, a public consultation process prior to introducing a bill, when the government would lay out, you know, what are the issues, and this is what we would like to, these are some ideas that we'd like to present or, you know, consider, and, you know, a white paper, and then when they come to a piece of legislation, it is, people have had a chance to look at it, to understand it, to relate to it. But this AI piece, I mean, people are having a hard time just getting their head around AI itself. Like, what does it mean? That there's no consistent definition. Its implications are speculative in many ways. The parliamentary process, I think, is not an adequate one for coming up with good legislation. And it shows in this case.
Okay. As someone who's appeared a lot before committee and been very frustrated in many of those appearances, I'm certainly not going to defend that process as an optimal way to create legislation.
Yeah, it's necessary, but it's not sufficient.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair characterization. I do want to come to the consultation or lack thereof, both before and after, in just a sec. But just before I do that, you do raise one of the other issues that, and you mentioned when the government first did this, that I was pretty harshly critical, and that was that they made some major changes just as the hearings got started, but at least initially said they weren't going to disclose them. They ultimately did. And I guess that also then raises the question, and certainly I would think the government, I don't want to speak for them, but I can well imagine some within government say, hey, you know, where's the problem? We actually did consult. We listened to the concerns after we posted the bill. We made changes. Maybe we made a misstep by initially saying we weren't going to release them, but we went ahead and did that anyway. And so certainly the witnesses that were appearing primarily on AI, acknowledging that there were witnesses that would have wanted to speak about AI but didn't have the chance to, but those that were especially focused on AI had the chance to take those on board. And so they might say, you know, so what's the problem? We listened, we made changes, we posted those changes, people commented on those changes. You know, how would you respond?
Well, I think there's a number of problems with that. I mean, clearly they were sensitive to the issue that had been raised about the lack of consultation, and also that the bill was more a draft than a bill, as was said. And so they came up with a set of very substantial amendments. Who they listened to and who they actually even sought out to. As a sounding board, I think is an issue. They said they had talked to or had meetings with over 300 groups after the introduction in June 2022. This was of Bill Tweet C-27, generally not ADA specific, so a lot of it was about the data protection and privacy. So there wasn't, I would say, a huge amount in terms of ADA specifically, and also it was almost entirely business interests. I'm not sure that they were very happy with the result, but they, did not have meetings with any of the people or any of the representative organizations of those who are presumably going to be most affected by the introduction of AI in workplaces. They didn't contact any of those. As far as I know, they didn't talk to them. And also, these are presumably the beneficiaries of the bill, and they don't talk to them. So I would say that they were only listening to one segment, and they did not address the problem of the lack of a diverse consultation. And so I think they just deepened their perspective and made it more specific, but they didn't address fundamental problems.
Okay. Why don't we continue on the vein of who they spoke to? Because I know that you did some very interesting work on consultations, because the government's been a bit touchy with that at times, or at least representative of the government, a bit touchy at times when people have raised this as a concern. I mean, to me, it's indisputable that there was not at least a public consultation before this bill was introduced. But, you know, they've tried to make the case that we've heard from lots and lots and lots of people. And you went ahead and tried to dig down a little deeper into that. Can you talk a little bit about what you did and what you found?
Yeah, well, I had requested, and as had the committee, a list of the meetings that they had held since, well, I wanted it on ADA, they gave it on all of C27, since the bill was introduced and up to the time that the minister spoke in September. I just broke that list down by broad category of business, academic, government, personal individuals, and so on. And that's where I came up with this figure that, you know, actually it was less than, significantly less than 300 that of business, academic, and civil society. There were six civil society groups, 100, if I'm recalling properly, well over 150 business groups. And also, they keep referring to these as consultations, but these were closed door private meetings with no minutes or no notes or record available to anybody. You couldn't tell what the agenda was. I understand there's needs for some degree of confidentiality, but a public consultation produces a public record, and you can see what the government is being, what the government, the input that the government is getting, and also you can see that there's a diversity, and those criteria were certainly not met in this this 300 meetings plus or minus. And you know, the committee or member in the Liberal Party, you know, said, well, ADA has been consulted extensively now. Well, that's, I beg to disagree. That's not what I would think of as a legitimate form of consultation when it's closed door, invitation only, basically.
Okay. Well, I mean, listen, I guess my view would be that it's not, if that's the only thing you do, then I certainly agree. I think that is consultation, but whether or not that's comprehensive, inclusive consultation, I think it's hard to suggest that it is.
Yeah.
Regardless though, I'm curious how you think this would, how a broader consultation do you think would have changed anything? You know, I think that if you take a look where the government has moved on AIDA, it started, frankly, with what felt to me anyway, like a bit of virtue signaling when it came to AI regulation. There just wasn't a lot of substance there. It was kind of, we feel the need to do something or say that we've done something. So here's something, and we'll figure out all the bigger issues later. There is still plenty of that in this bill, but they have tried to move it more and more towards the EU AI Act, a topic that has been talked about on this podcast before. This sort of seems to be the Brussels effect in action. Mm-hmm. And so I guess that does raise the question that, you know, if we do start to see countries, let's say like Canada, move towards AI regulation, and by and large, you know, given a choice between, let's say, I don't know, US style rules, in which case, which are certainly are not strong, a strong regulatory model. They seem a bit more self-regulatory in focus, and an EU model with a risk system kind of assessment. We've moved in that direction. So I guess, how different do you think this legislation is if the government does conduct a broad consultation before it launches this, or as part of this process, does some stuff that is more open and more inclusive than it would appear it was?
Well, it was good to see that the government was listening to at least some of the concerns and did introduce that package of amendments, and that they moved in some, you know, I'd say mild ways in the direction of the EU AI Act. That's a positive. But I think that if they had a much more open process, they could have drawn a lot more from the EU experience, which started in 2020 and went through extensive consultations and debates, and you know, reconciling the different parts of the EU governance structure. And I mean, they just basically passed it very recently. So they took 4 years in a in a relatively open way, and there were substantial changes in the process. And, you know, ADA makes a few steps, but let me just say a few things that where it falls short in ADA, that it doesn't live up to ADA standards. First of all, I want to reiterate that I think it lacks the fundamental democratic legitimacy compared to the EU Act, which did go through extensive consultations, and that's a fundamental flaw that I think we should not forget. The European law recognizes a foundation in human rights, which the current one ADA does not. A big issue we touched on earlier is that the commissioner, proposed AI and data commissioner, is not independent of the ministry, which has a mandate to promote the industry. And the OECD, among others, points to the fact that this is a fundamental problem with good regulation. You've got to have a regulator who's independent rather than, tied to the mission of promoting a particular industry. That, what we see here smacks of regulatory capture from the get-go, right? From the very start of the legislation. The EU Act governs a full range of AI based activities or applications based on an assessment of risk. There's four levels of risk, low, medium, high, and then unacceptable risks. ADA regulates only high impact systems and lists 12 broad categories, but doesn't offer any principal criteria. And there are no prohibitions on unacceptable systems or practices. And I think that is a problem, particularly given some of the concerns about the about generative AI. And I think if the government had been much more open about this, we could have had a better discussion about it's a very difficult question. How do you protect against the harms? The other aspect is that ADA only applies to the private sector, and the European Act applies across the public and private sectors. And we know that the federal government alone has got hundreds of AI applications in the works here. So there's a big gap there. So it's taken some baby steps in the right direction, I think, to having a well-founded regulatory system, but it's got a long way to go.
Okay. And then certainly there's some good points there. I'm in the midst, as we record this, of teaching a global regulatory tech law regulatory course with international participants. And in fact, it was the absence of government focus that actually captured some people's attention as we were talking through some of this. Mm-hmm. Given that there is scope to improve, you get that. Of course, that's some would say, well, that's what this process is all about. But there are certainly many who have tried to push for the notion that this is an urgent issue now. We actually saw it almost exactly a year ago, if I'm not mistaken, where there was certainly some that, it's hard to believe it's already a year has passed, but this notion, pass it now. That was literally a year ago. We haven't even moved that much further other than having had these hearings. So some say, it may be imperfect, but we need to move ahead. And obviously, if this does not pass, leaving aside your opening explanation for where things are at, which actually suggests that it may simply not pass even with the best efforts, but certainly it's not going to pass if there's a split or a delay on the AI side. If we go back to the drawing board, some might say, listen, the polls being what they are may result in a change in government a year from now. No reason to think this is necessarily going to be a top priority of that government. And so with a consultation with a different government, we may be looking at years and years and years before we actually see something in Canada. And so I guess it does beg the question, is something better than nothing? If the focus is that the process wasn't great, even though it at least has, in your own words, baby steps, is that better than nothing and potentially nothing for many, many years?
Yeah, I mean, that is a big question that's been raised a lot, particularly in this our group. We discussed it extensively, and people came down on different sides. So that some clearly wanted to say that at least contribute to improving the bill if it was going to pass. And that's what the our March letter, maybe February, letter did. It laid out, you know, priority amendments. And that's where some of us went. I'm mixed in that regard. I think it needs sort of two tracks. I do think that we need to draw attention to the lack of legitimacy of this bill. That's what we're doing. And my guess is that the government is not going to pull it back. I mean, they give every indication, right? I mean, they're not, don't think I'm naive, I hope. But at least drawing attention to this, I think, helps put some pressure on, particularly if it's related to pointing out fundamental flaws that need to be addressed, and keep the focus on that. So it's a murky situation, and I would say a lot of the problem is the making of the government, is the government's making on its own. If it really was urgent, if they really were concerned that we needed protection right away, and that was the argument at the beginning as to why they put it onto C-27 without consultation. It's so urgent that we couldn't wait for that. And then they've let it languish. I mean, it's not entirely their fault. I mean, there's obviously dynamics in the parliament itself where things are moving slowly. But they certainly haven't acted as if that they needed to move all that quickly. And also, I would take some of the more, I'd say, the overblown concerns about the existential risk that AI poses, and hence governments have to act right now. And that's the letter you were referring to from this time last year, the Canadian letter anyway, pass it now. And that was very actively promoted by the very people who are receiving government funds for that. I think they were in a bit of a conflict of interest, frankly. And that's, I think, an indication of actually how the policy process is going. And also, we don't probably have time for this, but about the budget proposals that have come out, where they want to spend another $2.4 billion over the next 5 years on promoting advancing AI, mainly by buying and running some so-called sovereign compute capacity, and for around $2 billion, and they're putting in $5 million to set up the Privacy Commissioner's Office. That's 2%, right, of $2 billion, and that's reflects both, I think, a misplaced priority, and also a rather dismissive attitude towards the to public interest. And I think it belies the question, the issue of what are the risks, and what are the regulations needed. They've put 50 million. They're promising 50 million over 5 years for an AI and safety institute. I've tried to get information about what that actually means. The experience in the US and the UK suggests that that's a bit of a misguided approach, or at least a too narrow approach, and it's more fig leaf. If they're really serious about protecting Canadians and making it safe, then they would put a lot more intention into making sure they've got a well-resourced, independent regulator.
Okay. Well, I think you've gone out with a bang here, both highlighting the challenge of reconciling a desire for the legislation, but at the same time recognizing that you want to ensure that it kind of meets the expectations and standards of the community, as well as some of the conflicts or very powerful, influential voices that appeared throughout this process, and what some of those outcomes might lead to. You know, you've been certainly someone that has of course followed this very, very closely, and certainly the letters, they may not have resulted in the response you're looking for just yet, but they have, I think, at a minimum succeeded in ensuring that perspective is very much on people's radar screen, and I think will be as they move ahead. So thank you for your efforts in that regard, and thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Okay, well, thank you, Michael, for this podcast and this opportunity.
That's the Law Bites podcast for this week. If you have comments, suggestions, or other feedback, write to lawbites@pobox.com. Follow the podcast on Twitter @LawBitesPod or Michael Geist @MGeist. You can download the latest episodes from my website at michaelgeist.ca or subscribe via RSS at Apple Podcast, Google, or Spotify. The Law Bites podcast is produced by Gerardo LeBron LeBoy. Music by the LeBoy brothers, Gerardo and Jose LeBron LeBoy. Credit information for the clips featured in this podcast can be found in the show notes for this episode at michaelgeist.ca. I'm Michael Geist. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.